Yeah.
Okay. Now it's okay. Okay, so I just wanted to address this point from last time, because we were sort of talking maybe in generalities, you know, but sometimes, like, when you approach the Mishnah, you have to start off in generalities. So we were saying sort of that that in the Mishnah it's saying, Al tar basicha im ha'isha.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Okay.
Why were you... Were you
this
there?
This is one of those Mishnahs that's very elusive.
It's, it's elusive. It's elusive. Okay.
You're
I'm happy that...
Or not?
I think I used to be...
I'm happy I got such a great reaction even before I opened my mouth. This is... Hey.
I used to be like, oh, this is very offensive to girls.
Yes.
And then I like lived in the real world and I was like, I know exactly
right.
What
right,
the hell
right,
says
right.
it.
Right. Okay. I mean, you know... Okay, whatever. But anyways, right? It says Al tar v'sicha im ha'isha, right? Now, if you look at the Mefarshim, it is not because this is not placing any kind of criticism on the woman. On the contrary, it's because of man's nature that he shouldn't engage in that. Okay, and the Mefarshim say because since a person's desire is such, a person's taivas and yetzahara is such, that it is much stronger than he is aware of. So what happens is, when a person does an innocent, what he considers an innocent activity of speaking about, not just sexual matters, but romantic matters, if a person indulges in that type of thing, what happens is, it causes in him, it increases his yetzer. It increases his yetzer. So even though a person looks at speech like a very innocent action, like a non-action, you see, but we explained that speech really is not a non-action, because that's what we brought in the Unklus from Bracious, where it says that God created Adam with, what was the pasuk again?
Nefesh Chaya.
Nefesh Chaya, right? Which means Nefesh Bahami, it means his Yetzer, okay? But Unklus doesn't translate it as his Yetzer, as his instincts. He translates it Ruach de Mamalala. Ruach de Mamalala means the power of speech. Okay, so why does Unklus put the power of speech in there when the Torah is talking about the instinctual part of man? Okay, so the answer is because with an animal satisfies his energies, his instincts through action. Animal goes out, runs after the prey, kills the prey, eats, whatever it desires, it carries it out through action. But man, primarily, most of his instincts, he does not carry out through action. He carries out through speech. Okay, so with man, speech is really the primary outlet of his instincts. Okay, and that you see clearly, because when a person sits down to eat, it's not really, eating is not really just a physical indulgence. But eating involves a social, talking. If a person sits down to eat with somebody else and nobody says a word, it's not even a suda. I mean, you feel like you have no satisfaction, you see? So part of the satisfaction is the speech. And that's why you find, you have the food channels. A food channel, a guy could sit around all day watching the food channel. What is it? He didn't taste the thing, right? But the answer is, the satisfaction of achila, a major part is the ideas that occur to you with regard to food, the whole involvement, the mental involvement is very often more important than the actual action. The act of eating takes, how long does the meal take? I mean, the actual amount of time you spend ingesting the food, maybe 10 minutes. The guy eats fast, the food goes out, that's it, he's full. You see, well, why does a meal take 2 hours? Because it's basically not eating, it's interaction, it's social interaction. So speech is really, in man, it's a primary element in the instinctual. Okay. So if a person thinks that when he's talking to somebody and he's engaging in certain ideas, certain thoughts, sexual or romantic thoughts, and it's just speech, if a person thinks that's a non-action, that's a big mistake. That's really the area where all of his energies become drawn. Okay? So that's what Pirkei Avos wants to show you. That don't think that this is a non-action. It's a very important thing, and you're involving yourself in your energies in this area. Okay. So, but actually, your question was with regard to something we said before that. That the pasuk before that, it says v'yiyu aniyim b'nei ve'secha. Okay, it says the Pirkei Avos says that aniyim should be members of your household. Okay, what does that mean? If you take a look at the Rambam says what it means is that instead of having servants, hiring professional servants to help you, you should hire aniyim. Okay, they should be your servants. Okay, so we asked, what kind of a thing is this? I mean, if you need a servant, you need a job done, so you have to get a guy who that's his expertise. You want to hire an accountant. You say, oh, listen, get an Ani who knows a little about the numbers and have him do it. I mean, it's very nice, but that's tzedakah. Tzedakah is very nice, but when you need a job done, it doesn't make sense to say, kill two birds with one stone. So you have nothing, because the guy doesn't do the job right, so you don't have the servants, you end up, your household is in disarray, and you don't have money to give them anyways. Okay, so better hire the person that's suited for the job, and then with the money that you make, you can give it to Lani. But the Rambam says that really, he says, he puts it in a certain term. He said, okay, so what was the answer to that? You see, and the Rambam also, the Rambam puts, it mentions a very unusual phrase. He says that the Chazal look down upon a person that has professional servants. They look down upon him. And that doesn't really fit in. Why are they looking down upon him? If you're telling me that really you should hire an Ani, because that's the right thing to do, and it's tzedakah, okay? So that's a meritorious thing. But why is it a gnai? The Rambam says it's a gnai for a person to have professional servants. What's the gnai? Okay? So really we wanted to answer both questions. Now, what's the idea of a professional servant? The idea is a certain image of sophistication. A person wants to have a certain sophisticated aura about him. Somebody walks into the door, and who answers the door? Butler, he knows how to answer the door, he knows the right things to say, he knows how to direct you, you see? So it's a certain kind, it's not a practical thing. In other words, if you have a person that is not polished, let's say, but he needs a job, he can answer the door too. He may not create the same impression, but in terms of the practical tasks that the man has to do, many people could do that job. Okay, but the difference is a professional servant is not a question of practicality. You see, it's the impression that he creates in the person. He creates an impression in the guest. This is a very important household. There's chashivas going on here. You see, that the Rambam says the Chazal look down upon. Because they look down upon a person needing a sophisticated image of himself. It's a false image. He's a person like any other person. And if when a person wants to create the image of sophistication and importance, that's an artificial thing. You see? It means it's a denial of his nature. Because he's not an important being. He's a regular, he's an existence that God created. What gives him this artificial sense of importance? It's a false sense. You see? And we said that a person that indulges in that type of activity, you see, it really causes him unhappiness. Because we said that a person's happiness has to result from a recognition and an acceptance of his nature. He has to be able to accept who he is. If he can't accept that he's just a regular person that exists, that has a certain function, and that God created, if he needs to have a certain kind of elite image of himself, you see, that means he can't really accept who he is. He's not happy with who he is. He wants to be something greater than what he is. Okay? And we said that really causes most people tremendous unhappiness. because then they have a pressure to be a certain thing that they're not. Okay?
So that, I mean, that means any form of aspiration is considered, is that like overextending what you're supposed to do? Is that like considered wrong anyway, to aspire to be something?
That's a good question. Well, what do you say? I mean, would that indicate that when a person aspires, it means he wants something better? Right? So it means that indicates a certain kind of dissatisfaction. Right? So would you say that a person should never aspire to anything? I mean, if a person doesn't aspire to be better than he is, how are you going to get anywhere? You say, I'm a total ignoramus. Okay, listen, I have to accept who I am. Right?
Yeah.
So what is the answer to that? You know, on one hand, we say a person should not have a false image of himself. But on the other hand, we say that if a person just accepts who he is and doesn't attempt to improve himself, that's wrong also.
Yeah. There's
so no what is the resolution of that question? It's a good question. Yeah.
He's not doing what, like, if you're hiring servants or whatever it is, like doing things to boost your ego, then you're not working on yourself. You're not doing any. There's no like embetterment on your part. It's you're just doing external things and
that's
using
right.
those to define yourself.
That's right. In other words, the Torah, when the Torah says that a person has to aspire and to improve himself, it means in terms of real improvement of his internal nature. You see? Gaining knowledge. Something that is a real change in the person's nature. You see, that's an improvement. If a person has a defect or a person has something that needs improvement internally, so then that is correct. That's what a person should aspire for, to improve his nature. You see, but increasing a person's external trappings has no change at all in the person. You see, the problem is not aspiring to something better. The problem is this is not accomplishing anything. This is just the appearance. Appearance, Chazal say, that's crazy. Because there's no change in the person, and it is simply a false aura. It's because it's false. If it were true that by having a butler it would somehow improve him, Chazal would say, of course you should do it. But it's not true. It's a total falsehood. So a falsehood is running from the self. You see, on the contrary, what Chazal say is, what is the answer? Chazal say, you should improve yourself. How does a person improve himself? By having a niyam in the house. That type of aspiration, that type of change is an improvement. Because that causes the person to look at himself realistically. So now the change that he's aspiring for is a realistic change. You see, that is the correct way to aspire. Yeah.
How do a niyam make the person look at himself?
Because when a person has an ani in the house, and the ani does a fine job, but just doesn't do it in a sophisticated way, that brings the person in line with reality. Because he says, what is the important thing here? X, Y, Z. This job should be done. Could this man do the job just as well? Yes. Now, is the man somebody that's sophisticated, that gives me a feeling of importance? No. But actually, that feeling of importance is false. You see, so having the ani there causes the man to have a realization of his true position in life. That you have an ani here and you have me. Now, am I really, is there a difference really? Because he has no money and I do? There's no real difference. You see, that causes the person to look at himself realistically. You see, but if he surrounds himself with sophisticated people, then he is hiding from the fact that his external trappings really do not make any change in himself whatsoever. Yeah.
I don't know if this is what Gil was asking, but how psychologically or emotionally does having a butler, let's say, make you feel more important? I don't know if that's what you're asking, but how does that work? What is happening that you're?
I mean, because what is happening is that the butler is doing certain actions that are have no practical necessity, and the actions are simply done to create a certain impression in the person watching. You see, so when you surround yourself with a person like that, what you're teaching yourself is that the true good is how people look at me. You see, how that person looks at me, that's reality. If he thinks I'm great, then I'm great. You see, that's a totally false thing. See, that's what the butler teaches him. Whereas the Ani teaches him, it doesn't really matter what that guy thinks of me. Because the guy walks in the door and he's sort of like, oh, what's this? You see? So therefore, what does that teach him? That teaches the Balabhas that what that man thinks of me has no bearing on reality. It's totally irrelevant. That's a realistic thought. Yeah.
So going back to Matt's question, so the who's worse off? Is the person that aspires to something external and not real, is he worse off than the person who just
gives up?
Yeah, he's just nothing. He's not.
He's worse off.
The aspirer is worse,
he's
right?
He's worse off. The guy who's aspiring to something false, he's further away.
I'm saying the person who's not...
person that's neutral?
Totally neutral.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, if you're just comparing it on that one level, you see, the one guy hasn't made a move yet. He's simply in limbo. He didn't decide what he wants to do. You see, he's closer because the guy who is endorsing sophistication, he's endorsing something. He's endorsing a false thing, that what that guy thinks of me is real. And it's crazy. What he thinks of you has nothing to do with anything. You see, the guy who's neutral didn't make a move. So, he's certainly better off. I'd rather be in his position. This guy has a false idea. You see? So that's the thing. The thing really is that what they're trying to teach you is that the happiness has to come. That, in other words, what happens is the reason why that ruins a guy is he's running away from really following his true nature. In other words, he has a potential. He has an internal potential that he was designed to function in a certain way. And if he pursues that potential, then he'll have a very good life. You see? But if he runs away from that potential and tries to create in him some kind of person that he's not, that's not good. That's not a good thing. So I just wanted to show one example of this idea that the true good state is where a person lives in line with who he is, and he attempts to fulfill his potential of the way he was designed. You see, the idea is that every existence has a certain design. Like you take a lion. A lion is designed a certain way. Now, if you take that lion and you put him in a cage, it's impossible that the lion will be happy or in a good state. Because he wasn't designed to be in that environment. You see, so really the only good state for the lion is if he's in a situation where he can fulfill what he was designed to do. If he was designed to run after animals and his body's built as a predator machine, then where will he be happiest? Fulfilling that function. You see, so man also has a particular design. If you study man, you're going to find out, well, what is the design of this being? Let's see, he has a mind, he has emotions, and if you study him very carefully, you're going to find out he's designed for a certain task. That task, he's most suited to. You see? Now, when you find out that, you're going to say that if this being fulfills that task, lives in line with that design, he's going to be in the best state. Okay? So that's why Yadus holds that the design of man, if you study man, you will find out he is designed to be a being that pursues his curiosity and pursues knowledge. You see, that's his design. He was built for that activity. That's why he was given a mind that could perceive reality. You see, so if a person pursues that activity, he has to be in the best state, because that's what he was designed for. You see? And I just want to show you, that's why you have, you see, when you have the Birkas Kohanim, if you listen to the Birkas Kohanim, it's actually, it doesn't make too much sense. Because listen to the bracha. It says, Yivarechacha Hashem v'yishmarecha. Okay. God should bless you and keep you. Okay? So the keeping part, I understand. He should protect you. You'll say, he should be shomer you, protect you from harm. Good. But what's Yivarechacha? He should bless you. How could you say, I will bless without giving some object that I'm supplying the blessing? In other words, I could say, I'm going to bless you with wealth. Right? Bless means I can confer on you something. Right? I'm going to bless you with wealth. I could bless you with health. I could bless you with many things. But how can I just bless you? Yivarecha, God should bless you. With what? It really makes no sense when you think about it. Right? So what kind of a bracha is that? Be like a guy comes up to you and says, I want to bless you. Okay. Is there anything more to that? Right? You would say, what that means is, I have a desire to bless you, but I'm not going to carry it out because I didn't finish the sentence. Okay? So what does it mean when the Kohanim say, Yivarechacha Hashem, God should bless you? What does it mean? Right?
I guess it's more of like, it's like opened to for it to fit that person. Open-ended kind of thing.
Okay. That's good. Okay, so, but what it means is that there is nothing God could bless you with in terms of giving you something. You see, that is not the blessing, that you should have something external. The blessing is that you should be in a situation where you could fulfill your potential. The blessing is internal. It is your nature to have a situation where you could carry out your nature and fulfill your potential. Like the blessing for a lion would be, the lion should be in the jungle. That would be the blessing for the lion. So that the lion can live in line with the way he was designed. You see, if I would say, give a blessing to a lion, give him X, it would not be a blessing. The only blessing could be that the lion should be able to live according to the way he was designed. So that's really the blessing that the Kohanim are giving you. Yivarechacha, that God should bless you, means that you should have a situation where you're able, you're free to live the way you were made to live. That's the only blessing. Any other blessing is not a blessing. You see? So basically what it means is that if any impediment, what would be not a blessing? If I'd have a situation where I'm prevented from fulfilling my potential. If I was, let's say, in a place where it was impossible to learn. So that's a curse, because it means that I have a certain potential, a certain nature, I'm designed for a certain thing, and now I'm blocked from carrying that out.
How are you answering the question, though, with the word still doesn't say anything?
Because it can't say anything, because if it would say, I bless you with X, that would mean X is the blessing.
Well, it's with your with potential, or something.
It's trying to tell you. It's trying to tell you the blessing is you have the blessing. In other words, the blessing is your nature. If you carry out your nature, that's the only blessing. There is nothing to be added to you that would be a blessing. See, if it would finish the sentence, then you'd say, Yivarecha Hashem, with what? He's going to give you material wealth? That's not a blessing.
Can't be a situation.
Blessing has to be the situation is a means to a blessing. You see, let's say God gives you a situation where God puts you in a land where a person could learn and he's able to fulfill everything he was designed for. Okay, he's able to be involved in Torah, in study, Okay, so then it's not the land that's the blessing. It, that land is a means to allowing you to improve and perfect yourself. You see, but the blessing is your own nature, that you should be in line with what you were designed for. That is the blessing. That's why you can't finish that sentence. The sentence is complete. Yivarechacha means that God should allow you to live in line with your nature. You see, and if a person lives in line with his nature and doesn't deny and go away from what he was designed for, then he's blessed. That is the whole idea of blessing. See, blessing really means where the being is in a perfect state. You see? So for man, the perfect state is where man involves himself in chachma. Because that's his essence. Okay, for an animal, he has a different essence. So his blessing is that he should that the animal should fulfill its function, whatever its function is. The blessing of an ant is that the ant should, whatever, build,
ant-hills.
You know, ant hills, colonies. You see? So that's the thing, really. The people make a mistake. The pursuit of happiness is not to run after X. You see, the pursuit is simply not to be distracted from your the activity that's most natural for a person. You see, that's the thing. And the activity that's most natural is not building his ego up, not engaging in activities that that simply increases desire without any satisfaction. The activity that's natural to him is the pursuit of chachma. That's really what a person would naturally run after and enjoy if he didn't have these impediments. Okay? So that's really the Pirkei Avos. It's showing you these things are impediments that are going to stop you, that are gonna, you're going to get in the way of yourself. See, they're going to prevent your essential element of chachma from expressing itself. Because they're going to stop you. Because the person says, oh, I can't sit and learn all day. I mean, what will people think? That's an impediment. You say, I'm controlled. I have to now, my life has to be dictated by other people. That's a crazy thing. You see? So they say, number one, get rid of that. People should not dictate what you do. It should be dictated by your own intelligence. Okay, so that's the thing. That's what I want to mention with regard to your question. What is? Because you said, well, what does make a person happy? You see, so universally, what makes any being happy is if it's in line with its nature, and if it goes away from its nature, can't be happy. In particular, with man, that means insofar as he is involved in perceiving reality and understanding God's system of chachma. That's something a person has tremendous enjoyment from. And that's really part of his design. Okay? Okay. So that's that. Okay? The only other thing I want to do is, if you take a look at the Rabbeinu Yonah, on this thing of Altara Sichaim Aisha, I mean, I think he has like an unbelievable thing here. Okay? He says, because the Pirkei Avos says an interesting thing. It says, Al tarba sicha ima isha. A person should not engage in excessive. It doesn't say not to talk to women. You see, if you notice, again, I mean, a person reads this, they sort of project their own thing onto there. Oh, can't talk to women. It doesn't say not to talk to women.
It just says, Al tarba. Yeah.
Tarba. Excessive. Talk is okay. You see? It doesn't, right? Because that would be denying your nature. That would be, again, denying your nature. If you say, don't talk to women, so then you'd be saying, there's a part of me that I'm not happy with. I'm an instinctual being. I have instinctual drives. And that doesn't fit in with my self-image. I want to try to get rid of that part of me. You see? That's also denying your nature. Because that's a component of the person, that he has an instinctual drive. And if he doesn't satisfy the drive, okay, you gotta be happy. It's impossible.
You mean aspect of talking to women is satisfying?
That's right.
That is, in terms of even not being excessive, it is satisfying. And
there's a satisfaction there. That's right. Exactly.
Right.
See, that's what Uncle said. That for a human being, the satisfaction of his energies has to be through talking. He has to be talking. I'm not going to enjoy sitting in a meal and not talking to somebody. Can't enjoy it. You see, or an Isha, if he would just do an instinctual action without any kind of interaction, any kind of speech, that's not, he's not going to enjoy that. Person does not get satisfaction that way. So satisfaction has to include speech. Impossible otherwise. You see? So that's why the Pirkei Avos says, doesn't say not to talk to women. That would make any sense. But it's tarbe. Tarbe means it's excessive. Okay, so we'll see, how do you define excessive? Okay? But you have to have that concept. You see, that it's not ever, it's never telling you to go against anything that's in your nature. It's an impossibility. Okay?
I mean, but it is a little, I mean, there is an aspect that, I mean, I guess you would say is your nature, in terms of, like, even having, like, relation, like, going, like, why would that not be considered part of your nature?
To do what?
To have relations with a woman.
That is part of your nature.
Right, so I'm saying, even without the context of marriage, it's still part of your nature.
Without the context of marriage,
right.
That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
You see, that's what I want to explain. It's a good question, because you say that, what do I mean, you shouldn't go against your nature? Okay, well, let's look at man's nature. Man has an instinct to murder. He's aggressive, right? He's vicious. He has all these instincts. So if I say, don't go against your nature, I mean, that means if a guy wants to kill somebody, he should do that. I mean, right? Anything that's part of his nature, that's part of his nature. You see? But the thing is like this, you see? The thing is that there's a difference between man and animal. You see, animal has a fixed nature. It's a fixed nature. So anything that's in that nature, if that animal desires to kill, he must kill. And that is the right thing for that animal. You see? But the difference in man is, he has a different kind of nature. He does not have a fixed nature. Because he has free will. So therefore, when I say his nature, I would say a better word is his design.
Not his desire.
That's
right.
Right.
So
exactly.
He's confused, right?
He has a certain design. Now let's take, for instance, he has a sexual instincts. Well, the question is, we have to ask, what's the design of that? You see, what was that put in man for? You see, now if a man studies, he'll see the this instinct is not there for unlimited satisfaction, even though the instinct itself might be driving for that.
Right.
You see, but his design is that instinct plays a role, a very important role, in the nature of ultimate man. In other words, if he reaches the highest level of man, he will find there's a very good reason why he has that instinct. You see, and that instinct is something that's very important, that allows a person who's involved in Chachma, wants to carry out the Ratzon Hashem. And part of the Ratzon Hashem is that the world should have people, that he should populate the world. So if he didn't have this instinct, you see, he would be lacking insofar as his interest in reality. Part of reality is a person who wants, just like he exists, he wants others to exist. You see, that's a realistic goal. And that instinct is very good and a very important part of that goal, you see? So therefore, that fits into the design of man. That's something that helps him gets him involved in areas that are very important. Now he has kids, he has to train the kids. You see, it teaches him how to relate to other people, how to be sensitive to another person's emotions. See, if a person doesn't have kids, so then Chazal say that a Dayan, a person can't be a Dayan if he doesn't have children. Why? Because a person that has children, he is forced to look into other people and be sympathetic. You see, but if a person doesn't, he's not forced to do that. So it's a lacking, you see, it leaves a certain part of his nature unfulfilled. You see? So all of the instincts have a proper expression. You see? That's what I mean by nature. The correct design, you see. But of course, the instincts, you can't just follow an instinct, because that's going against his design, because part of a person's design is that he has intelligence, and that the intelligence looks and decides when to do what. Now, if he would just follow an instinct, what an instinct teaches him, he's going against his nature, because his nature is chachma also. You see? So nature means he's one unified nature. You can't take a part of him and go, hey, that's his nature, let's follow that. No, his nature is, as a unified whole, how does the man function properly? And part of his function is with chachma. Okay? So that's why, right? But an animal, you don't have to do that. Because an animal, there is no variation. He has a fixed thing. So anything he wants to do, that's it. You see, by man, not the case. Okay? Because of his bechira. So when we say nature, I mean design. Okay? If he follows his design, he's going to be very good. Okay? If he follows a particular emotion and allows that emotion to dictate, then he's really going against his design, and he's going to be in bad shape. Okay? So the thing is, right? That's the difference. Yeah, it's
important.
That's an important difference. That's an important difference. Yeah, because when you say follow your nature, you figure, oh, this is great.
Exactly. It's like
you have to separate the two. You got to separate the two.
Right.
Okay? So that's why I say tarba. Tarba means it's already, the instinct has taken over. That's bad. But sikha depends. Not necessarily a bad thing. Speaking because that's part of his nature. Part of his design is to relate to this other person in a certain way. And this is part of how he's built. Okay? And that's a good thing. Okay? But, okay, so Rabbeinu Yonah says like this very interesting thing. I mean, psychologically, be shocked to see that this is the way Chazal really held. Okay, take a look at what he says. Chasav Rashi, Zichrono Levracha, Ki Ba'alos de Rebbe Nasan Omer.
Oh, wait, which Dibur Masa are you on?
It's Be'ishto Amru Kabachomer Beishas Chaveiro.
Oh.
Okay, so they said even by his wife, he shouldn't be tarba. He shouldn't be excessive in his indulgence in the speech and in the romantic. Okay, but certainly not with the wife of his chaver. Okay, so wife of his chaver. I mean, why bring in that? I mean, that's we need Pirkei Avos to tell us that you shouldn't excessively engage the wife of your chaver. I mean, I don't think that the person would really imagine that that's would be a recommended course of action. Okay, but right, but somehow or other, Pirkei Avos puts that in there. Okay, but he says like this. He says, "Beishto nida amru, kavachomer beishas chaveru." Okay, with his wife who's a nida, he shouldn't. Have excessive talk, okay? Certainly not with Eishes Chavero. Okay, what does it mean? Certainly not with Eishes Chavero. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, "V'rotzel lomar." What it means is, "Shelo laharbos devarim beishto nida." Why shema yigbar hayetzer v'yavo lidei pshia? Okay, so a person has to be use his seichel. In other words, if the wife is not a nida, so now, let's just look into this. So they're saying excessive talk, right? So they're saying that if the wife is not a nida, so then the excessive talk is okay. Tarba besich is okay. Why? Because she's mutter to him. But if she's a nida, then the sich is not good. Okay. So in this situation, what does it mean, tarba? What's excessive mean? How would you define excessive? He's saying, with the ishus nida, that's excessive. If she's not a nida, that's not excessive.
It's like a different girsa?
No. What do you mean, different girsa?
Well, what's he saying, this ishus nida? Is he learning that this is what the mission means, or there's like a different girsa?
Oh, that's a good point. I see what you're saying. You're right. You mean that it's a different Pirkei Avos.
Okay.
That's a good point. Okay, you're right. It's not necessarily an interpretation of our Mishnah, so scratch that. You're right. It's a separate. Okay, we have to take this separately. You say, you know, you have to take this separately. He's not interpreting our Mishnah of excessive speech.
No,
that's good. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. It's my mistake. It's a separate Mishnah, so let's take it separately. Okay. So he says that what this Pirkei Avos said was that you shouldn't have. I'd like to see Avos de Rebbe Nosson. In other words, does Avos de Rebbe Nosson say Al Tava Sicha Yemeisha? Does it have the same girsa? Do you have it there? Because if it does, so then
yes, right here.
So then what I said would be valid. Yeah. What does it say?
I assume it's in the same place.
Yeah.
Is it like, hey, it'll be the
it's
same
very thing. Long. I mean, it's much longer. But I think it's worthwhile just to see, because your question, your point's a good point. Let me just see. Oh, I don't know if this one has it. Maybe it tells you where it is. Let's see, what does it say? Does he have it in A?
It says after Shiago Torah there.
No.
Oh, so it's different.
Yeah, you gotta it's split up differently and it's much more lengthy.
Oh
for next time, but I'll show you out there. I mean, it's, you gotta sort of skim through it.
Yeah, where you?
Oh, I have it.
You got it?
Yeah. Big time.
You mean you have the rubber almost to Rebbe Nosson,
yeah,
but you don't
yeah,
have the spot.
I
mean,
spot.
Okay. You want me to take a look? Should I take a look? Quick look?
Glance.
Let me just see. Yeah. See the Torah. Here. One second. It's, let's see.
This is a blizzard, and this is what they call a blizzard now?
Mm. No, it's later on. It's supposed to be later on.
Okay, it's Perek Shvi. Okay, it's Perek Shvi Aleph. See, it says, to Yosef ben Yochanan, Yishu Shalayim, Amar Yibeischa Pasuch
Levracha. That's Gimel over there.
Oh, that's Gimel?
No, it's Shvi Gimel.
Oh, I have
right?
Shvi Gimel?
Oh,
yeah, that's
right
it. Shvi Gimel. Yes, yeah, Shvi Gimel.
Also
yes.
Right before Gimel. Right before Gimel.
Okay, good. That's right. So he's got like this. Atarba Sikhi Ima Yisha, V'yafiluhi Ishto, V'ein Tzarech Loma Be'eshes Chaveiro. So he's got the same, that's basically the same thing that our Mishra says, right? Davar Acher, well, he's got that in parentheses, by Gimel. I don't know if you read that, but Al Tarva Sicheim Ha'isha Ketza Bizman Shadam Baal Lebeis HaMedrash Lo Hayunogim Bo Kavod. Okay, this is not what he's quoting, right?
So why did he even bother quoting the story? It's awesome.
There's a different part of it. I don't know. Okay, but anyways, here's what if you learn that it's an interpretation of that when is it excessive, when his wife is Anita, but when his wife is not Anita, so then it's not excessive. So how would you define excessive in that case?
dictated by whether it's in either or not.
Hmm?
It's dictated on the situation, like based on the situation.
Based on the situation. Right. In other words, excessive would mean where the speech is, where the situation is such that the speech puts you in jeopardy. You see, where the situation is such that the speech is, right, that the speech could lead to a vera. That's excessive. Okay, but where the situation is such that the speech does not put you in jeopardy, so that's not excessive. Excessive means going against, it means ignoring the warning of the mind. There's a danger here, and the guy simply, what do you call it, chooses to discount the danger. That's excessive. Okay, but where there's no danger, and the speech has an appropriate object, you see, has an appropriate outlet of its natural result. The natural result of the speech is that it will lead you to a certain action. If there's an appropriate venue for the speech, that's not excessive. But if the speech is such where there's no appropriate conclusion, that's excessive. You see, so isha nida, there's no appropriate conclusion. So he should limit the speech as much as possible. Okay, so then you'd have a barometer for what's excessive. At what point do I try to limit it, where there's no appropriate conclusion to the speech? Okay, but the interesting thing that I wanted to point out was the Rabbeinu Yonah says that Rashi quotes the Avos Reb Nasan, and so it says Shlo laharvos dvarim beishtol nida shema yigbar hayetzer v'yavel l'dei pshia. So he's ignoring the strength of his instinctual drives, and he's discounting the possibility of chait. Okay, but he goes on. He says like this: Kavachomer be'eshes chaveiro sheyitzro tekafu aleha beyoser. So what does he say? What's the kavachomer? The kavachomer is that eshes chaveiro, where the desire is greater. So he's telling you, right? And then he quotes Mishle. Mishle says, Mayim gnuvim yimtaku. That somebody else's water is sweeter. Stolen waters are sweeter. Okay? And he's telling you an unbelievable psychological insight. Because this is not something the average person would actually formulate and decide that this is a principle. The principle that he's stating is that the instinctual drives are stronger with somebody else's wife, with an object that's out of your reach. You see, that's a greater instinctual drive. A person's not really aware of that. A person may think, okay, it's something that might cross my mind on occasion, but I wouldn't say that I'm more attracted to my friend's wife than my wife. You see? But Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that in some sense, not absolutely, but in some sense, a person is. You see, that the drive for somebody else's wife is greater than your own wife. You see, it's an amazing statement, really. It's an amazing statement that he's asserting that as a psychological fact. You see, and if a person studies psychology, you'll see that it is confirmed by psychology. Because psychology maintains that there's actually two parts to the mind. There's the conscious desires, what a person consciously feels, but there's also a part of the mind that's left over from infancy. That certain drives are formed when the person is very young, and there are drives in the mind that he's not fully aware of. You see, but they're formed in a certain way, and his desire for a part of his desire for his own wife is because he has some kind of image of another person in the back of his mind. You see, and the other person is always somebody else's. You see, in general, when a person has a desire for a thing, always in the back of his mind is the picture of somebody else's thing. You see, but that's something that a person is not fully aware of. You see, but it's a very powerful desire. So a person may not be aware of it, but the instinctual drive for something that's beyond what's his is very powerful. You see, much more powerful than he realizes. You see, so that's why you find that very often. That's why it's impossible, really, because of that, because his drives always go beyond what he has. And those drives that are beyond what he has, what somebody else has, are much more powerful. That's the reason why a person really could never, purely emotionally, he can never be satisfied, really, with the things that he desires. The desires of the mind, he can never be satisfied by indulging in his yetzer hara. It's an impossibility, logically, really. Because what happens is, in his mind, he has an image. If I could have that thing, that would be unbelievable. You see? But the problem is, he doesn't realize that part of what that excites the drive is the fact that he doesn't have it. That it's beyond him. You see? It's something that's somewhere else. That's part of the allure. Now, what happens is, the moment he gets it, it becomes his. Now, once it's his, it loses that excitement. You see? So, therefore, he notices that once he gets it and he indulges in it, there's like a letdown. You see? But logically, there has to be a letdown. Because part of the excitement was that it was beyond his grasp. Now, the moment he's got it, it doesn't have that fantasy anymore. So, there's a letdown. You see? So that's why now he says, okay, I gotta get that. Now there's another object sets itself up. You see, another thing beyond his grasp. He just keeps running, chasing after the carrot. But logically, it's impossible for him to be satisfied. Because fully. You see, he could get satisfaction. We're not saying a person can't. But if a person puts all his energy into running after the physical desires, he's going to become very unhappy. Because when he does that, everything that he's running after becomes his, and he loses the enjoyment. Loses that enjoyment he's looking for. Yeah.
So what is he chasing now? Is he chasing the excessive conversation, or is he chasing what may lead from that excessive conversation? Are we saying, we're also saying that
that's right.
There's something...
Yes. See, that's what they're saying. The excess comes because in the back of his mind, he's really searching for that other thing. That's what's pulling him. You see? And that's what they're saying. You have to be aware that when you're running after X, you see, when you're engaging X, really, it's not just X. There's a lot of X's behind that X. You see? You're running after that person. But you think it's that person. If I could get this person, that's it. Let's say your wife, right? So he's engaged in talking to his wife, and the wife is the object of his desire. So what his energy is focused on the wife. So insofar as he's concerned, that's the person, you see. But what he doesn't realize is that there are a lot of people behind that person, you see. So once he has that person, you see, now he notices it's something else, there's something missing. You see, he didn't realize that the desire was not just for that person. You see, but that's why it's excessive. Because the excess, if it was just that person, he could be rational. He'd be rational. He wouldn't. He'd speak to the person in a moderate fashion. You see, what's causing the excess is because there's a tremendous pull beyond that person. So that's the excitement, and that's the excess. You see, that excess now is going to pull him further. You see, that's what they're saying. That's the excess is an indication that there's some person behind this immediate person. There's your wife, and then your neighbor's wife. You see, if the neighbor's wife was out of the picture, if that was nowhere in your mind, okay, very nice, the wife... You're involved with your wife, very nice, but there's no room for excess. It would not be the excess. You see, the excess is due because in the back of your mind there's another wife behind this wife. That's what he's saying. You see? So that's what I'm saying, that you have to be aware of that concept. You see, so if a person is aware and says, okay, now I see why I'm, what the excess is. You see, so then he's looking at himself rationally. But if a person is not aware and just follows that drive, you see, either he's going to be very unsatisfied, because what will happen is, when he finally, let's say he's pursuing a girl and now he marries her and now he has her, you see, there's going to be the letdown. If that's his whole fantasy, is the unbelievable state of happiness that's going to result from the fact of me marrying this girl, you see, and that's his whole life dream, he's going to be very dissatisfied. Has to be. Because part of the excitement was she wasn't his. Now she's his. Okay. Boring. You see? So that's why they're saying that don't let that be an ultimate fantasy. Because it's the ultimate fantasy is never for that one person. See, that's the thing. But if a person realizes this, he says, okay, this is a good thing. It's psychologically a good thing. It's something that brings me a certain satisfaction, but it's not the whole of life. It's just a part. Yeah.
When we say like excessive talk, are we speaking in like objective terms also? Like are we saying subjectively whatever? Like if you're moving towards that desire that you want fulfilled, then you have to know like that's excessive.
How do you measure excessive? I mean, that's a good question. I mean, what we can get out of here is the concept that there is such a phenomenon going on. You see, now how a person decides what's excessive, that may require particular knowledge, that a person knows himself and he's aware of what's going on. You see, so each person may be different.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is to have those concepts in the mind so that you know there is such a thing as excess. What it is, okay. But there is such a thing as excess and why there is excess. Where the excess is coming from. That's an important thing.
Yeah. Okay. Knowledge of that.
The knowledge of that, that's right. Then he knows what's going on internally. It has much less of an effect. And if a person doesn't know what's happening, it becomes very, very powerful effect on. Okay, but you see, the Chazal, didn't have like a rosy picture of man and a very superficial. You know, they knew exactly where the man is headed. Where is this guy headed? Not at her. It's the guy. It's the house next door.
Is that driving to make a difference? Is it because it's someone else's? I'm asking, is it because it's someone else's wife, or is the same thing if it's just, is it someone that you don't have, or is it because someone else has her? In other words, is it the same thing? Would this idea be the same thing if it was
also
Panuya, like a single girl?
No, you see, psychologically,
because it's someone else's.
Yeah, psychologically, it is much more powerful if somebody else has it.
It's more out of reach.
What's that? More out of reach.
More out of reach.
That's right. It's more out of reach, and the fact that somebody else has it gives it a certain quality of mystique, yeah. Like a certain quality of mystique and value. That person, he's got that thing.
So it's less because you don't have it, it's
that's
more
right.
because someone else
right.
has something.
That's right. And Panuya also. Panuya, the attraction is because even though nobody else has it, but you can't have it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. What's the drive?
It's more powerful. It's the fact that it's out of your reach, but it's the furthest out of your reach.
Okay.
If somebody else has it, then it's an impossibility. There's just no way. You see, it's the furthest out of the reach. Whatever is the furthest out of the reach, that appeals to a certain part of his mind. You see? And that's why really the instincts are infinite. The person wants infinite satisfaction. Because it's always the thing that is the furthest away appeals to him as a tremendous draw.
Right, and I guess it's more of, it's not actually, even though that is a concern, that, you know, it's going to lead to something like, you know, having relations or But it's more of keeping your mind on the right track, I'm guessing, and that's keeping away the impediments. Like,
that's right.
That's what it is. It's not like, right.
It's not necessarily, I mean, even though there is a possibility, but it's not necessarily that every time it will actually lead to that action. You see, but it is just the involvement. The involvement takes you away from the correct derech. And even if it leads nowhere, it doesn't matter. The speech is a total involvement. It is really a powerful involvement. And even if it doesn't take you to action, it doesn't matter. In terms of man, that is where he outlets his energy. If your energy is going there, you can't possibly pursue the correct goals. Not possible. Because a person needs a lot of energy to pursue chachma and to pursue things that really are important to the person's nature. It requires tremendous energy. Can't do it as a pastime. A guy, you know, very little energy left, and he's going to now sit down and learn. Forget it. You're not going to really be involved. It requires tremendous energy. So the energy has to go somewhere. If it's going here, it's a loss. Alrighty.
Okay. Imagine it's also more like a Goya more than a Jew then also, right? That's something to be aware of. In other words, would a person probably have that same emotion for
non-Jew.
A non-Jew is more
awesome.
Inaccessible than that.
Inaccessible, yeah. But really, if you actually in Mishlei, if you look up the Pasuk, so the Rashi there says, I mean, I guess he's quoting Chazal, that Tom Eishes Ish is greater than Tom Panuya. You see, it's the Eishes Ish.
Right.
That's somebody else's. Okay, so I guess, do I press this button here?
Yeah.